Werewolves, dire dogs, chupacabras. You know, for many, these creatures are works of fiction, the products of misconception and overactive imaginations. But if these stories are indeed myths, then why are so many of these details so similar? And why do so many of these witnesses repeat the same thing over and over again? I know what I saw. That's the name of the latest book by Linda Godfrey, and she's next on Coast to Coast AM. I Know What I Saw, Modern Day Encounters with Monsters of New Urban Legend and Ancient Lore. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. Linda Godfrey with us, one of the most respected authorities on anomalous animals and paranormal phenomena all over the country, specifically Wisconsin. She has investigated wolfmen, Bigfoot, and other strange creatures for more than 25 years. She's had a number of her own field encounters, and as a journalist, she was the first to break the story of a terrifying werewolf-like monstrosity lurking in the shadow-shrouded forests around Elkhorn, Wisconsin's Bray Road. I remember that story well. Welcome back, Linda Godfrey.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be back.
How have you been?
Very well, thank you. A little busy. This book took me a good 3 years, including all the publisher's time, you know, that they need to work their magic upon it. So it's feeling really good to have it out there. The actual release date is tomorrow. Actually, today, now that I think about it. Yeah, so it's
perfect timing.
Exactly.
Hey, before we get into it, the Beast of Bray Road, give everybody a little highlight about that, because that was one of our first times we had you on, and what a great story.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's what really catapulted me, although it was a slow catapult at first, it took a while, into this rendezvous with cryptozoology that I've had my 27 years, I think it's been. So it was 91, 92, when I had a job at the local newspaper, and they offered me the job of reporter. I was doing cartoons for them and artwork. And my very first week into the job, somebody said, "Hey, did you hear that people out on Bray Road, which is a 3 to 4 mile long stretch just east of Elkhorn, Wisconsin, did you hear that out there they're saying there's something like a werewolf?" And I laughed. I thought, what joke is this? They're trying to get the new reporter, ha ha. And as I asked around town, I found out, no, there really were people who were saying there was a werewolf on Bray Road. And I happened to drop in on the county animal control officer about another interesting thing, which was that we were having mutilated dogs found.
Jeez.
And some other strange things like that. And I said, have you heard about this thing people saying they saw out on Bray Road that looks like a werewolf? And he said, oh, you mean this? And he opened up his file drawer and pulled out a manila folder marked werewolf, which...
top of this one, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really was. People have been calling him and saying, I saw this thing. I don't know what it is. But if there were such a thing as werewolf, that's what I saw. It was standing, you know, it was between 5 and 7 feet tall, covered with dark, shaggy hair, pointy ears on top of the head, long muzzle, and walking on its tiptoes is the way they usually describe people. Excuse me, the way that people usually describe these things walking. And they say its legs were bent backwards, which means they're looking at the dog's hock, which would be our heel. And it's carried up off the ground because they do walk on their toe pads. And when I went to visit the people who were saying this, I was very impressed. I hadn't expected much, but as it turned out, they were a very diverse bunch, women, children, older, younger, blue collar, white collar, several farmers, one man with a very high clearance from an area major air station. And I thought, they don't seem like they're lying. And furthermore, I thought, why would anyone who was just doing a hoax or trying to have some fun leave all their contact information with the authorities? Because, you know, of course, if anything happened or they were charged with fraud or anything, mm-hmm. you would know right where to go find them. People just don't usually do that. So We thought it would just be a short local story. I was thinking, you know, like local folklore or a campfire. And lo and behold, once the story ran with these witness with these witness descriptions, it went, well, we can't say that it went viral back then because the internet was not what it is now. It went national, was I think how we put it. People were just very excited about it. They began writing me longhand and typed letters that they had to look up the address to the newspaper and send me, and saying, I have seen this myself, or my grandmother's seen it, or somebody. It's not a joke. And 10 years later, after that never stopped happening, where any time that I was on a show of any kind, radio or TV, I would hear from people, and they would tell me their stories, and I felt obligated to keep the lore, as I thought of it, because no one else seemed to be interested. And I decided to write a book, thinking that would just stop, you know, all the speculation about it. People would know what it was, and it, in turn, just fueled more. And so here,
right.
I've been about, I think this is book 18, on just strange people, places, and things. And every time I write more about these creatures, I hear more.
More stories pop up, don't they?
Exactly. People are just eager to let me know that it's happened to them too, or they want an explanation. And so here I sit, you know, with another book.
Are you convinced, Linda, with all these stories that, one, people are seeing something? Can we all agree on that?
Oh, I think so. I do not claim to know precisely what it is, but it's a thing, as they say today. It's a thing, we might say more specifically, it's some type of phenomenon. It's not any sort of collusion. It's not, there's no such thing as mass hallucination. It's something that is happening to people in all walks of life, usually unexpectedly. Usually the people who are actively looking for it are not the ones who normally see it. It's when your guard is down, when you're not thinking of it, when you have no idea what it is, those are the people who seem to come upon it and have the sightings and encounters.
And the subtitle of your new book, I Know What I Saw, Modern Day Encounters with Monsters of New Urban Legend and Ancient Lore. The ancient lore really excites me because something happened to the people of ancient indigenous tribes, Native Americans, wherever they may have been. These people saw creatures too, didn't they?
They did, and we know that from their art and from some of the literate ones, the stories that they've engraved. I think back to the Sumerians. And they have this one creature named, it was one of their gods, I believe, named Pazuzu. He was kind of a very difficult character, some people believe. And Pazuzu was sort of a humanoid bird form, and very much like some of the Thunderbird depictions of the Native Americans and others. And why we now, one of the most recent flaps of any type of unknown creature has been this dozens and dozens and dozens of sightings of something that looks like a giant bird bat with sort of a humanoid center. And they've been mostly over the Chicago area, surprisingly enough. And people are comparing it to the Mothman. But we've just had that same issue, same description back in Sumerian times, and then you go to the Egyptians, and they're also having all of the humanoid creatures that we refer to as monsters, things with dog heads or dog bodies, the ibis, a type of a bird man. They all have this idea that somehow there are parts of animals, parts of men that can go together and create these unusual creatures.
A lot of people have thought that some of these creatures could be dimensional. I've ruled that out, Linda. How about you?
You mean coming from another dimension, or?
Yeah, that they're coming through portals and things like that.
Well, I would not say that I've ruled it out, but maybe there's just a better way of putting it, that they're not, I don't believe that they're extraterrestrials from another planet myself. That just doesn't seem to have enough evidence. But there's a way of describing it that many of my Native American friends I've talked to in different tribes, they're not all exactly the same, of course. They have, they're each has their own unique culture, but most of the time it goes something like they believe that particularly the upright canines and the Bigfoot and these big spirit birds, and now lately I've been hearing from them the black panther-like creatures also. They say these are originally spirit beings and that they can come to this place where we are, the earthly place, in order to procreate, eat, have, they have all kinds of things to show us that they do have solidity. They leave tracks and footprints. They can certainly leave claw marks or bashes in people's cars, especially some of these larger canine types. And so we know that they're not just ghostly type things. But on the other hand, there are altogether too many incidents where people have somehow emptied a clip of ammunition into one or hit it with a car or whatever, where nothing happens to the creature. They kind of, you know, redouble and then straighten themselves off and hurry off into the woods. It's not like you would expect, though, with a normal earth creature, if it's like I'm thinking of a bear, you know, especially a grizzly bear or a big cougar. If they want to see you as prey and they see you as any sort of a menace to their territory or their offspring, they'll come after you. You know, we have that happen all the time, not super frequently, but every year you hear bear reports or whatever. These other things don't do that. In 27 years, I've only had one person tell me that they actually had bodily harm or physical hurt from it. This was a man who was on a hiking path in a national forest up in Quebec. He was just out for a lark. He didn't have a gun or anything like that with him, and he ran almost literally face to face with an upright wolf-like creature.
And it didn't. This in this case, this thing what attacked him or defended? What happened?
Well, they came face to face, and he said he's just in shock, and his instinct is to just kind of move forward to the right. And unfortunately, he said it was kind of like it felt sort of like in a supermarket where you're coming down the market with your cart, and somebody else is coming. You kind of go. Neither one knows which way to turn. And he said it seemed to be like trying to rush past him, and he sort of jumped a little bit the wrong way, and it ended up grazing him with its mouth had been open, you know, and its fangs were showing, and it grazed him with its fangs, kind of tore his shirt and left a gash in his side. He sent me a photograph of the healed up.
But it could have chomped down on him if it wanted to, I bet.
He said, you know, if it had wanted to get me, it would have just taken
it. It would have
right
torn
there.
Him apart, yeah.
Yeah, and instead, it just, you know, ran for the hills. And that's almost always what happens whenever anybody gets close to one of these things. They act like they want to pursue it. They act like they want it. They'll say, I thought I was lunch, you know, but then it doesn't happen. It just runs off.
What do you think these creatures are, Linda?
Well, they seem to be creatures that can span different energy levels, you know, and it gets into some kind of...
Well, and years. They must be breeding because right. What they saw during the ancient days can't be the same creature we're seeing today. It's got to be the offspring of them.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, there's new procreation of one type or another going on here. It's not like there's been just, you know, one creature, one of each type of creature since way, way back in ancient days. There are definitely many reports where people will say there was one with a smaller one, you know, that I thought was probably an offspring of some type. I had one very credible report from a man who saw, this was in the land between the lakes, between Kentucky and Tennessee, where he saw what he took for a female upright canine with three smaller ones about the same size, all walking on their hind legs, all crossing the road in front of him as he was leaving his campground. So they seem to procreate when they're here. And some of my Native American friends think that perhaps is their main reason. And it's almost as if they want to mimic a powerful animal in order to go about their business, whatever that is.
Though you don't think they're extraterrestrial per se, might they have been dumped here years ago from extraterrestrials?
I would say, you know, knowing what we know about extraterrestrials and the way that the UFOs seem to interact with humans and with other things, with animals too, and since there have been sightings where it appears that some sort of large unknown creature has just debarked from one of these UFOs, it's possible, you know, I always feel it's not up to me to put limits on the universe and how these things can work, but I do try to just observe and see what things seem logical in light of the other things that are known, and then give it my best guess.
How many urban legends are out there, Linda, that are really the real deal?
Yeah, and that's a good question, because there are things that aren't necessarily what they look like, you know, and actually the latest flap of bat-like creatures over and around Chicago is one that I sincerely have my doubts on, because it doesn't follow the sort of description. Well, it follows the description in being a large bat-like creature, although with these things, they never show up next to something so you can tell how big they are. In other large bird and large flying bat incidents that I've investigated, they aren't afraid to be on the road or next to your car. It's usually out of the city. And these ones by Chicago, these things are showing up over the Art Institute and over the, you know, the fancy downtown areas and certain neighborhoods. They're not out in the liminal or sideline places where these things are usually found. And I have a theory that they're probably, or at least very likely, some type of performance art, because there happens to be a well-known professor from the school, from the Art Institute, where my own son went to school, mm-hmm. who did kind of like almost living art, living dioramas with mechanical bats that he would take and have sort of a bat cage exhibit with real bats and then these large mechanical bats that he equipped with some sort of sonar emitting. Just the way that they have their echolocation, that was on them in a modified way, and also their wings would flap. They could be remote controlled, and that he started doing those I think around 10 years ago. Well, since then the drones have become really affordable and widespread.
Sure.
And if he could figure out a way to attach a drone to that, he could send here. Maybe not him necessarily. Maybe some students who knew of his work. There are other art schools downtown there, too, so it could have been anyone, really. I did write to him and never received a response because it just seemed so familiar, so similar to his work. He's also the one and he also has done things with animals in the past. He was famous for supposedly creating a hybrid rabbit with some sort of jellyfish to make it glow like a green color when it was under ultraviolet light. And that story has been somewhat debunked, too.
All right, Linda, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment with you on Coast to Coast AM. And, of course, we will continue chatting about your book that just came out, I Know What I Saw. I want to talk about Slender Man when we come back. And welcome back, Linda Godfrey with us, her book that just came out, I Know What I Saw. We will take your calls next hour, questions, and maybe you've seen something as well. Linda, first explain what Slender Man is, or stick people, and have other cultures seen this thing?
Yes, they have actually, but it's been a while. It's something that feels sort of new, and these stick people, Slender Man type things. They look physically similar. They're tall, very, very thin, like really too thin to be human is how people describe it. They often are wearing hats, in which case they're called hat men. Sometimes you don't see any features on them at all. They're just black, almost like shadows, and then they're called shadow people. So there are different variations of it. But the Slender Man is one that became popular around the early 2010s through this new type of website called Creepypasta. And Creepypasta was sort of borrowed from the old copy and paste instructions of the early computers, where before you had to laboriously type things, and then all of a sudden with computers you could just copy them.
Mm-hmm.
Where else?
Paste it and off you go.
Exactly, exactly. And so that gave kind of a jump start to many literary sites where they had lots of people kind of having fun putting out a starting legend, and then everybody would write their own next incidents or endings to it. And they became kind of these sort of interesting large communities for people to use on the internet. Well, one very popular area was horror. And if you started searching for things, you could find names like the Rake, Wendigo, Goatman, Michigan Dogman, Melonhead, and the Six-Legged Centaur was one of my favorites. Slenderman was kind of an eerie one because there was sort of an association with children. You know, it was kind of a very, very creepy thing. And also, there was this sort of threat that it could do things to people if it didn't obey them, that it had this mansion somewhere in the woods. And unfortunately, in 2014, or 15 it was, in May, he became attractive to some teenage girls, almost, they weren't quite teenagers even yet. I think they were about 12. And they somehow took this idea of Slender Man, and to them it felt like, made it something real, where they felt that they had to protect their families from Slender Man, and then they could also go and live in his mansion in the woods if they killed one of their classmates. And they ended up actually almost doing that. They stabbed a classmate, another girl, a number of times, and actually
that made big news when it happened, didn't it?
It did, and that was in Waukesha, which is barely an hour from where I live. So we heard a lot about it, you know, and lots of coverage of the trial. And there was a lot of debate as to whether these girls were actually mentally ill, or if there was just some power. And people, of course, always say, well, maybe there is power behind that image somehow, that they were tapping in and it was making them do these bad things. And it caused quite a bit of stir around here. But it just goes to show the power that our collective consciousness sort of seems to have when these things come out that touch on a nerve. And I think part of the reason it was so powerful is that this idea of these tall, slender things has been around for a while and in many cultures. There are Native Americans that have these stick people figures. They're somewhat related to deer people, things that people see running on their hind legs down roads. They're tall. They've got very skinny legs like deer. Sometimes they'll have hooves even or horns. And they're considered very much like the water horses of Scotland in some places by some of the Native American tribal people, because they can shapeshift and lure people. They'll see this beautiful-looking woman. They don't notice that she's got hooves. And they go somewhere with her and then end up having terrible things happen. So they're very nervous if they see a very lovely woman running along the road at night trying to signal to stop and pick her up. And maybe some of that has to do also, it's easier to have that sort of thing going on where you've got automobiles, things that are going fast and can take you places, and where you might feel obligated to pick someone up and give them a ride.
Has Slender Man been known, Linda, to try to hurt people directly?
I don't believe that there are sightings of something that looks exactly like Slender Man, or the shadow people, where they where people have felt directly hurt. I think, particularly with the shadow people are something that are much more widespread and better known. I think they've been around longer than our automobile computer age creatures or monsters have. And I don't know that it's actually, you know, kind of like the upright canines. They seem very, some people will say they seem demonic even, and yet I don't have the records and I haven't seen the stories of them actually injuring human beings or even animals.
That's an interesting take. But nowadays with social networking, isn't Slender Man almost like a fad thing?
Yeah, it became really very much a fad in the social networks. And again, the center of these stories were something about it just appealed to these young people who were writing stories. Maybe it is just so scary to think of this really stretched out thin person that doesn't look like it could be human, and yet there it is, you know, on the roadside or following you or wherever. And although I have to add, I really personally don't have lots of sightings of the Slender Man, if any, myself. A few people I've heard have had reports on it, but generally when there are reports, it's more like the Hat Man or the Shadow People. And that also gets into the same sort of thing with animals. For instance, I have had and have been getting increasing numbers of reports of something called the Shadow Wolf.
The Shadow Wolf?
Shadow Wolf. And these are from people in very diverse places. They haven't heard of one another. It's not something that I've written a lot about, although I've started to. But I know of one place on the edge of a national state forest in Wisconsin where I've had three separate people write about they're driving along, and they see this kind of dark thing. It's either alongside the road, in some woods near the road, somewhere where they can just see it, and it has a wolf-like shape, but it's just this dead black color. And they can see eyes. Usually it has a glowing red eye. Sometimes you see the teeth. And it's just huge for any type of actual dog or wolf, sometimes enormously huge. And usually it just sort of melts into the shadows as they get out of range of looking at it. But that's kind of a new, and they'll just automatically call it. So say it was like a shadow wolf. I had one incident, this was actually in my last book, Monsters Among Us, that happened, I believe, in Tennessee, where an entire large family saw this thing. They were all outdoors doing kind of farm chores. They had like large vegetable gardens and a corn patch. And they all of a sudden looked and saw this big, shadowy black wolf looking at them from the woods. And they all started kind of yelling. There were children. There was, you know, a parents. There was a grandmother. And this thing started just walking across their garden as if they weren't even there. And finally it turned and looked at them. And when it did that, they realized it was like something two-dimensional, because when it turned, there was almost nothing there to see. And then it turned back and they could see the full side view of it again. And the grandmother, and I interviewed several members of this family, and they all verified what happened and what it looked like. And the grandmother, who I'm not sure how old she was, grabbed some type of farm implement and started chasing toward it, and then it just ran off somehow into the woods.
Amazing. Now, what is the witchy wolf?
Witchy wolf is, originally, I thought it would be just sort of a legend. This thing has been known for a long time in a place, it appears in a place called Omer Plains on the east side of Michigan. And about probably 20 years or so ago, there was a writer for an area publication, who David Kulczyk, his name is, who wrote kind of a definitive story about what was thought of it at that time. And at that time, it was most often seen in an open area called the Omer Plains. There was a very old cemetery near there. And it was the old trope of teenagers sitting and necking in the car, and then this monster comes up to you, and everybody screams. Sometimes the boys are out of the car, and bad things happen. And they claimed that there were pines all around this area, pine trees, and there would be things heard screaming and whistling in the pine trees. Some people said, well, it's just what pine trees do, is if there's a wind, they kind of, you know, make noises when it runs through the fir branches. And the thing was that it didn't have necessarily to be windy for that to happen. So I looked into that a little bit more, and I was able to go to their historical society and library that they have right there on the grounds. And after inquiring, I was given some copies of some reports that had been written by a former, possibly town historian. They seemed to me that they were half actual accounts and half kind of nonsense put in there. But according to these papers, this all started back in the Civil War, when one of the families sent one of their sons off to fight in the Civil War, and he mm-hmm. came back with not even much of his remains were left there.
Oh,
and
geez.
He had died in one of the determined camps where the captured soldiers were kept. And when he arrived there, the family buried him. It wasn't a good time of year to do a lot to the grave, so they waited till spring and went out with a party of people to kind of clean up the graves that were out there. And this was in more this happened in slightly more modern times. It was a few years after, I believe. Anyway, they're working on these graves, and they opened up where the box had been put to kind of get it in there better. And to their surprise, there was a she-wolf with puppies. And she came charging out of this grave at the people, who went shrieking back to the town. And now that all sounds like it could be a very easily made-up story, and it could have. But I started by looking up in genealogy and other places, local history records, the names of the people, the name of the people who lost the son, the son's name. I found his regiment and everything, verifying that he was in the Civil War and that he did come back deceased, you know, and was buried in a place. And there was another set of papers that described more modern happenings, where there was there were two couples in a car, and the boys got out of the car because they heard something noisy, and as often happens in and this sort of thing I call urban legend, because it's the same actions, that maybe different people, different unknown animals, whatever, but it's the same set of actions that happens, and you see it all over the country in different places with the teenager. That's one of the major ones. And they got out of the car to hear these what these whistling sounds were, and then they started encountering these big, shadowy-looking black dogs. And they were supposedly set there by Native Americans long ago to guard their sacred area, which happened to be the Omer Plains. And when the people would go away, the dogs would too. There was a little additional one where two of these young men were said to have vanished when they went out to look for the witchy wolves, or these howling dogs that were guarding their sacred areas. They just disappeared, and the only thing that was ever found of them was one of them had a belt buckle with his initials on it.
Oh, jeez.
And that was supposed to be the only thing. And I did find people with these family names there. And in such a small community, it's unless it was well known that one person was playing a joke on all the people in town, it's hard to imagine that you could get away with having this publication talking about all these specific people. And I even checked their occupations, George. They had, you know, one was listed as an undertaker, one was listed as a grocer. And so there was kind of a lot to go on in terms of searching them out. But it's really hard to separate, in this case, the fact from the fiction.
It is, yet you have to look at who was involved. And so far, everything seems credible, doesn't it?
Well, the people do, yeah. I didn't find any real answer as to who wrote the historic papers, however. And in fact, when in the signing of it, it was a little jokey sounding. I can't remember exactly what they said. But to have this entire saga reaching from the Civil War to present day, and there are still teenagers going out to that area, you know, and parking in to see what's out there. So it really has gone a long way and still it seems to be added to. And I'm kind of keeping an eye on it to see if there are other stages that it evolves into.
Now, what are dire dogs? Seems to have a lot of dog stories and wolf stories, but what are dire dogs?
Yeah, dire dog is a name that I came up with. We're used to hearing the term dire wolf because those were real animals that went extinct maybe 10,000 years ago, something like that. And anybody familiar with the Game of Thrones TV show on HBO, some of the main mythical characters on that show were dire dogs. They were larger than wolves, and they played a big part in the plot. All of the young people of the North each had their own dire wolf and stayed with them for life. Well, the actual dire wolves, and we have, like I said, thousands of skeletons of these things, especially in Southern California, there are quite a few. And they were very widespread. They were maybe 25% larger than today's largest timber wolf at most. They weren't even all that much bigger, but they were constructed differently. They had very wide heads, and they had these very wide jaws so that they could crunch bone. And ever since people started reporting the Beast of Bray Road to me, they all different ones were also sending me encounter stories of these very large animals that were canine, but they had broad heads, they had large teeth, some of them even had hyena-like ruffs on their neck, and they didn't, for the most part, go on their hind legs. So to me, I couldn't really categorize them as dog men, because that was the main thing about dog men, is that they were on their hind legs, which made them look sort of human-like.
It's dramatic. We'll come back. We'll talk more about these and take calls on Coast to Coast AM.